Welcome to the Raucous Caucus. This is Mark Levine, and our phone system is working now. Yay! So that means, first of all, I have Terry DeKester on the line, which is terrific. It also means that you folks can call in now. You weren't able to call in before at 202-889-9797. Terry, I apologize for that. I thought it was because of the break-in this morning, but it appears to have been caused by a massive corporation by the name of Verizon. So I know how much you love big corporations, but this time I'm afraid they did us in. I know that's unusual for you.
Oh, yeah. I love corporations. I remember back at a previous radio station where a certain corporation probably called Verizon or AT&T, I forget which, but they literally had our T1 line cut.
Yeah.
You know, and we were out for 3 days. Not that a corporation would do that.
No, anyway. Of course not. Hey, listen, I know you don't have much time because of our shortened show, and I apologize for that. Like I said, blame Verizon. But so I've talked about my topic at length. You didn't hear it because you weren't here, about immigration. I want to move on right to your topic and give you that chance. Something about narcissistic, destructive culture. What are you talking about?
I'm talking about America, Mark. I'm talking about America. I made the mistake in the last few weeks of watching an absurd amount of television. And
hopefully it wasn't Honey Boo Boo. You didn't watch
it? No, it wasn't.
All right, good.
Even watching good things like, you know, the Colbert Show and the Daily Show.
Okay.
Good things. But, you know, in the very first, just to simply understand what I'm trying to say here, Mark, and I think you understand this as well, you know, there's always a debate between nature and nurture, what develops, what causes what in terms of our human development.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no question whatsoever that it's at least 50% nurture, if not more. I mean, nurture has almost probably a larger percentage to do with our development than nature, you know, except for certain genetic problems that may exist. And the point being, it's nurture, what you're talking about is your culture.
Mm-hmm.
And what you're talking about is, therefore, American culture, since we're in this country. And you can look at very simple facts like destruction of family and the fact that single-parent family is, you know, the dominant number, dominant percentage these days. There are more people in single-parent families and there are more kids with single-parent families than there are with dual-parent families. You can look at all the trends in our society in the last few years. They are all pushed, dominated, caused by one simple fact. And that is contemporary capitalistic marketing. And the thrust of contemporary capitalistic marketing is to make you feel as if you are the single most important person on the universe, in the universe, if, of course, being whatever product you have to buy, be it a car or whatever. But our entire culture and now our political culture continually teaches us that, one, we are exceptional, that two, you can be anything you want to be, and so on and so forth.
But
it has created this totally narcissistic view as opposed to a community view.
Well, now, Terry, given that you call yourself the doctor of democracy, and I still haven't seen that degree yet, I'm still waiting for you to show me.
I'm sending you the original copy soon.
All right, I want to see that, because you've been promising me that for about 5 years now. Terry... given you and me and Garland and all of us, I'm not going to dispute the narcissistic culture, but aren't we all victims to it? I mean, don't we all do it? Isn't America largely about saying, hey, you know, we're really great and I got this great product and you should buy from me? And that sort of that jostling causes capitalism and money to flow, doesn't it?
Yes, it does, and therein is the flaw. And it's heightened by the simple fact, if you look back even historically, I mean, let's assume that the country had some rational moments. You know, one of the costs of being or assuming that you are the victor, which of course is what we assumed to an absurd degree regarding World War II. Yes, we were significant in it, but, you know, that doesn't count for 29 million Russians who fought and were killed, you know, as opposed to a few hundred thousand Americans.
We were the victor. We weren't the sole victor, but we were certainly the victor.
Well, we were a victor. We were
a victor.
And we were the one nation in the World War period, that was not physically significantly attacked.
True.
Only Pearl Harbor. That's really all that happened. Everybody else had to live in hell bombed out of them.
There were two tiny Aleutian Islands, but that's okay. Fine. That's the exception that proves the rule.
Yeah, and I think that's where it all began. In a sense, you know, there's a cost to winning a war as well as to waging a war or to losing a war. And it began with that, okay, we're the victors. It's only because of us that, you know, that the war was won. Well, that's not quite exactly true. That eliminates about 60 billion people overall, 60 million people overall that were killed. You know, so,
or that fought very hard, the British and the Russians, to be sure,
yeah,
but
yeah,
also
the
partisans, the French and the resistance,
the
fighting behind the lines,
yeah,
and everybody else. Right.
Yeah, but it started this whole culture, it seems, or maybe it started beforehand, maybe it started during the revolution, but at any point, this whole idea that we're somehow other unique and special, but it's been drilled now into not we, but to you. You, the individual, are unique and special, and therefore you deserve anything you want. The backside of this, you know, Mark, which is equally destructive, is when you don't get everything you want or anything you want, you get frustrated, you get angry. You might even buy a couple of extra guns.
I knew you were going to take this to Newtown somehow.
Yeah.
We have no evidence that Adam Lanza didn't get what he wanted, and that's why he went in and started murdering first graders.
Nobody in America gets what they wanted, because if they got what they wanted, according to our culture, I would have every sexual partner I ever dreamed of. I would have all the money I would ever dreamed of. I would have all the cars.
Does your wife listen to this show, Terry? I'm just asking.
No, she's not.
Okay, all right. Maybe I should hide the archive. I don't know.
Yeah, please do. But I mean, really, you know, if we, you know, we are taught we can have anything and everything.
See, Terry,
we're spreading this culture around the world now.
I guess I see it as it's yin and yang. All right, yin and yang. I'll just mix.
I can have both yin and yang.
No, that's the point. I'm about to mix a Chinese metaphor with an old Talmudic saying, just showing the incredible cultural diversity that is America. But there's an old Talmudic saying that every human being on Earth should keep two pieces of paper in his or her pocket. One says that you were created in the image of God, and the other one says you're nothing but dust. And the point is that you need to be reminded at certain stages in your life of either one of those pieces of paper. When you're particularly down and out and miserable and depressed, you should be reminded you're created in the image of God. And when you are full of yourself and believe everything belongs to you and you should get anything you want, you should be reminded you're nothing but dust. To me, that's what I mean by yin and yang. The point is that to some extent, self-confidence is good. To some extent, individual worth is good. If you have none, you're not going to achieve much in life. On the other hand, you're absolutely right that too much of it is a bad thing. If you look out, again, I'll give you one more Talmudic saying, if I am not for myself, who will be for me? But if I am only for myself, what am I? And the point of those rhetorical questions is obviously to say you should think highly of yourself, but you should think equally highly of others as well. Your argument, think, is not that self-confidence is bad, but that we're not thinking of others while we're thinking of ourselves, right?
Exactly. And, you know, and I appreciate the Talmud perspective, and it's a perspective that's valuable valid in almost every single religion. Unfortunately, religious understanding and exposure is diminishing over the years, you know, an extraordinary degree in the United States. And, yeah, the point is there are always counter forces within our nurture that can lead us towards community, and there are people dedicated to community, and I think even people like myself and you and Garland, you know, we are trying to serve community and help community into a large degree, but it doesn't compare to the information, the inundation of information, saying, no, you can have anything you want, period.
So your argument, I think, is that capitalism harms community and promotes individualism. Is that your argument?
Yes, unless there's something really to counter that, and we don't have that anymore. Except for a few political speeches, it's not about we. It's about we're going to make sure you have a job. We're going to make sure that you aren't taxed. We're going to make sure you have the gun rights or whatever it is. The whole idea of community has diminished, and in terms of advertising, it's non-existent. And all you got to do is sit down like I did for the last couple of days and watch. I actually watched, you know, just even 30 Rock, the last episode, and every single commercial. I also go to a gym, where I exercise, and there's all these television screens on, and it's all about you and what you can be and achieve and everything else. It's not about community. And that's costing us as a nation. And it's the height of our narcissism because, again, you know, narcissism means, well, I'm looking at me and that's the only thing I want to look at.
I'm even thinking about military commercials. It used to be,
yes,
Uncle Sam wants you, join the army, join as part of one, you know, communal thing. We're all fighting this together. And now when I think about the two slogans that I can think of, one is be all that you can be. Not be,
yes,
all that we can be all that you can be. And the second one's even worse. This one, I think, actually has so bad they actually have retired the slogan. They had a slogan for a brief time, I remember, called an army of one. That,
yes,
somehow you were going to, like a video game, defeat the dragon and defeat the Al-Qaeda by yourself. And I couldn't think of any more stupid or, frankly, dishonest slogan than an army of one. The whole point of an army is it's not one. No single individual ever can constitute an army. And if they can, they're probably dangerous and should be locked up.
An
army, by definition, is people working together to achieve a task. And that's why we trust an army. We don't trust an individual to keep our security throughout the entire nation. And I thought,
yeah,
that was like I said, not only a horrible slogan for narcissistic reasons, but actually dishonest, because there ain't no such thing,
yeah,
as an army of one.
No, although in a way we've even moved towards that to a large degree, because now you can have, and yes, there's, you know, layers of supposed security and control over, but you can now sit back and control your drone.
Right.
You can just fly your little drone in and you can wipe out anybody you want to wipe out. And as you know, we're even empowering the drones to make that decision for us. But, you know, you're exactly right. Even the idea of going from the idea of being a soldier, which sort of implies, again, a team thing, as,
sure,
opposed to a warrior.
That's right.
And our conversation has changed entirely to warrior. You know,
so what's the answer? I mean, there are still communal things. I like communal things. I like going out to the mall. I have not missed an inauguration since I've been here in Washington. I said, not true. I did miss George Bush in 2004. All right, so I can't say that.
Yeah,
but
you did.
But I protested in 2000. I was out in 2008, 2012. But also, I'm proud to say that every single July 4th, I go out into the mall and with my, you know, fellow Americans and enjoy that. There are certainly communal things. They're in religious institutions. They're in public parks. They're in things like July 4th celebrations where every American of every walk of life comes out. We certainly have communal events that continue to occur in America. How would you argue that we can promote community dampen down some of this excess narcissism?
Well, we have to go a step further, and not to diminish what you are doing or what you are saying, but, you know, to go to a communal event, like be it a football game or be it,
Super Bowl.
You know,
don't we all share that?
Super Bowl. Yeah, you know, or,
today?
Or you know, 4th of July, et cetera. That is totally different from being, say, in a community organization, say, with your PTA.
Okay.
Or being with a community organization such as a church or, you know, mm-hmm, a synagogue. You know, where you're actually interrelating with all kinds of other people and other people's needs.
Or the United Way, a better example, where you're actually serving people in need without regard to any particular religion or anything like that.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, without that social face-to-face human contact and human interaction, that's far different than, say, I'm texting, than email, than going to an event with 600,000 strangers. It's a very different world to be involved with a simple community of people, be it your neighborhood or whatever, and working socially with them. That's a totally different experience, which therefore requires, you know, the very fact of direct human interaction requires a certain degree of humility, because it means, you know, you got to listen to other people's point of view. You got to be aware of their, hopefully, their body language, their sensitivities, their needs. It's a totally different point of view. And even when we're doing things like everybody watching the Super Bowl, well, we're focused on that little black box, or now colored box, and that is not necessarily a community activity. It's not person to person. There's a big difference.
In other words, we're in the audience. We're not on the field.
Yeah,
we're not creating the dialogue. We're simply passively watching it.
Even if we're yelling and screaming and jumping up and down,
yeah, no one sees it.
We're not really part of the event, you know. We are a spectator.
That's true.
And, you know, and it's a very different way that our culture has shifted over the last umpteen years. I mean, you think of, not to idealize everything, but a small town community, a small town America, even a small town or big city ghetto, you know, had had, you know, a sense of community that just doesn't exist today. I can give you one poignant example, and it just take me a minute, but, you know, one of my first professional jobs in theater was in Philadelphia, and I was on the south side of Philadelphia, South Street. I was Theater of Living Arts, great theater, but right in the middle of the ghetto. I was one of three whites that lived in the whole area. You know, I finally crossed the line into a few bars and restaurants and everything else where people began to recognize me as a community. And I lived right there on South Street, and I had a walk-up apartment, and I shared it with an African-American roommate and all of that stuff. And, you know, I felt a little bit threatened for the most part, but okay, you know, I was doing all right. One day I was walking down the street, minding my own business, and this car of punks pulled up and started to get out of the car to harass me, threaten me, rob me, whatever. Out of nowhere, 5, 6, 7, 8 other members of that community, all African American, came up and simply said to this other gang, "He's ours. Get out of here." They left. I never felt so damn safe in a neighborhood in my life.
You were
life,
of that
Mark.
Community. You were not a stranger. You were that community.
Yeah. Yeah, regardless of race or anything else. Right. And I didn't have a lot of personal interaction with them, but I had some, you know, but I was part of that community. I felt, wow, this is great, you know.
Yeah.
That wouldn't happen today, and I don't think, not because of race, but it simply wouldn't happen because we don't have that kind of connection with each other.
I think it still could happen today. Maybe I'm more optimistic than you. It depends where you are and what neighborhood you're in. And
sure.
But you know, there's still, I think, a warm feeling. I certainly felt it at the inauguration with people standing around me, people I'd never met in my life, people I'm never going to see again in my life. But for a moment, we were all, maybe because we all shared our excitement and our you know, we had probably similar political views, though we didn't express them. Well, we all kind of booed Newt Gingrich, so I guess we did express them. But the point is I felt a connection with those people, complete strangers, unlike, I mean, you'd lived in that community for a while. And
well, let me put a different context on it. And again, I'm not dismissing the value of being with a group of people supporting a particular idea or cause. I mean, I've been in numerous parades and everything else and part of that and spoken at events and all of that, and it's incredibly valuable.
And you, I'm sure, were arrested with other people in 1968.
Yes, when I was arrested all by my lonesome, too.
Right.
You know, but that's another whole story, including for political reasons. But
who, you? Okay.
Yeah, me.
I know.
But that's still different than you and I getting together and sacrificing some of our time, energy, money, whatever, and working together and sacrificing for other people. That's a whole, again, it's another level.
Well, let me distinguish then.
To do that.
Let me distinguish then, because part of what you're talking about is communal spirit, but you're talking about something deeper. You're talking about, I don't know what you want to call it, charity or simply giving back to the community. You're talking about actually communally getting together and making the world a better place and not just getting together to celebrate July 4th.
Yeah, and not just getting better by making sure you get the better job, you get the higher pay, you get the promotion, you get whatever, regardless of what anybody else is getting.
So you think that's happening less? You think there's less Peace Corps volunteers, there are fewer people that are going out and volunteering in soup kitchens, you think there's a smaller number of church or religious groups that are out there giving shelter to the homeless. You think it's definitely less than before?
Oh, I know it is. I know it is. I mean, statistically and numerically, et cetera. I mean, the weird thing is it's sort of like, and again, there's sort of a disconnect here that's important to understand, is like when the horrible thing happened, you know, in Newtown, you know, at Sandy Hook. I mean, you know, millions of people send money and send flowers and build little shrines and everything else. Those same people don't get together at a PTA meeting or a city local meeting and, you know, work together to make change.
Now, that's interesting because also when Haiti was hit by earthquake, there were a lot of people that, you know, sent money but then haven't any concern for Haiti a year later. In Newtown, apparently they have a surplus, a surfeit. They have so many stuffed animals, they have to give them away to others. And I'm glad they are. Good for Newtown for giving them away to others.
Sure.
But as horrible and horrific as Newtown was, you know, a pile of first graders shot many times. The imagery is particularly gruesome. And, you know, there are gun deaths every day in America. Single day, about 100 people are murdered by guns, and those 100 don't get near the, because there's one here and one there all across the country, and there's not, you know, 20 first graders in a pile. We don't hear about them as much, but I've noticed just since Newtown, you know, there was a shooting in Texas. There was a shooting in California. It just since Newtown, you start to perk up your ears and you notice, what can we do other than have better laws, which is one of the things certainly progressives are working on? But in terms of community, how are you saying that in our own neighborhood, when we read about someone that's been shot and killed, send something to help that family and not just the famous families of Newtown?
I'm saying you got to go further than that. I'm saying you've got to go offer your service to that family if you can, you know, directly or indirectly, but not just give them something, but say, I'm here. I'm here. I care. I matter. I'll shine your shoes. Whatever you want, I will help during this period. I'm saying, you know, yes, be organized within groups, but again, be totally interconnected, because that's what's lacking in our society. You know, it's a winner take all, and you know, society where the community doesn't matter that much anymore, and it has to, because that's the problem. You can see, you know, what's happening in Congress is merely an extension of exactly what I'm talking about. You know, your point of view, your opinion matters more than anybody else's point of view, and of course, a society can't stay together that way.
I'm a bit of a geek and a bit of historical geek. I love history, but I think that one of the ways you learn from the present is to study the past. And if you've read Alexis de Tocqueville's Democracy in America, it came out in the 1830s, mm-hmm. Fascinating, because here you have, I guess, a French aristocrat coming and exploring America and doing, really seeing America through foreign eyes. And sometimes I think when you walk into a situation and you're not of it, you can sometimes even describe it better. And I think that's why de Tocqueville's book is still read today. But one of the things he talks about in his book is all of the many, many groups that America, the Americans are joiners, that we are a member of our church group, and we're a member of our employment group, and we're a member of this family group, and we're a member of this charitable group, and we're a member of this sports group, and that Americans are always members of various communal groups that do things together. We do everything by go out and feed people together. We go out and shoot together. I mean, we do everything from one to the other. And that was the thing that to him was so surprising, is that America was always reaching out to join in these communities. And, of course, he's talking about 1830s America, but the question is that still true today? And maybe it's not.
Well, remind me of the exact era that he was writing
1830s.
In when he was in America.
The 1830s. Yeah. So it was like early America. Obviously, he's talking about white people, and he's talking, although, you know, the black communities among the slaves.
But he's also talking about the beginning of the, if not already the in process, you know, extreme immigration to the United States, where communities literally coalesced when they arrived here, the Italians with the Italians, you know, the Germans with the Germans, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And today, quote, we're all Americans, but we're not unified about anything.
See, I don't think we were unified in the 1830s. I think we were at each other's throats over slavery.
We
certainly, you know, Adams and Jefferson, it was probably the nastiest political race ever in 1800. People forget that.
No, I just meant the communities, the individual communities
were unified. We weren't unified as a country. But what we were joining and promoting unity in smaller groups, in individual groups.
Like my ghetto neighborhood in Philadelphia,
there
where black or white, I was part of the community. Unfortunately, my good friend, I have to run now because, believe it or not, and I'm not trying to sound overly righteous here, but I am due in church at this very moment.
Good for you. And while you're there, go out and join with a bunch of church people and go work in a soup kitchen or provide shelter to somebody.
You better believe it. It's a privilege to work with you, Mark, and hopefully everything will work better technically next week.
I sure hope so. Thank you again, Terry, for coming here on the Rockets Caucus. This is Mark Levine. I really enjoyed that discussion with Terry, and I'm enjoying the discussion with you as well. If you want to call in at 202-889-9797. Our phones are now working. Yay! 202-889-9797. We'll be right back right after this.